AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide. In less than 1 hour, President-elect Joe Biden will become President Biden. What might the change in the administration mean for all of agriculture and farmers in particular? We'll check in with two past leaders of USDA to get their takes on what we should all expect.
Live from Inauguration Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with former USDA Secretary Mike Johanns. Then it's on to former USDA Secretary Dan Glickman. And right after the news, Marky Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Laurie.
All right, Davis, thank you so much, and thank you for joining us on AgriTalk today. I'm Chip, and it's kind of a weird situation looking at the TV. Split screen. One is still President Trump arriving in Florida. The other is the inauguration.
Okay.
And the two are not in the same place. It seems weird. It's
a little
weird.
Odd.
It is not unexpected, but it does nonetheless seem weird that the sitting president is not going to be at the inauguration of the next president. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I wasn't able to get very close to the Capitol grounds. I'm as close to the festivities as I can get without actually leaving my home. I'm in the eastern room of my home, eastern wing here.
Okay.
Not much to see from here right now, Chip. Not much to see.
Thank you. Thank you for the report. We'll be back to you for more on that later. I don't know.
Terrific.
Your view might be as good as anyone else that does not have a specific invitation to the shindig.
Yes. Or a National Guard uniform. Yeah.
Right. Well, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to be there either.
Apparently not. No.
Apparently not. Yeah. Wow. Crazy stuff. So, yeah, within an hour, we will have President Biden, and we're going to, I'm so looking forward. We had the conversation with Mike Johanns yesterday. That's coming up next in the next segment. Some insightful comments from Secretary Johanns about some of the challenges that the Biden administration will be facing in the next 4 years. And then conversation with Dan Glickman. I mean, it's tough to predict exactly what Secretary Glickman is going to say, is going to talk about. Should be a fun second half of the show.
Great.
With Secretary Glickman. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, as we said, President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration takes place at noon Eastern time today. His inauguration speech will focus on the need to bring the country together following the storming of the U.S. Capitol and extreme partisanship in both chambers of Congress. Biden's first day actions are meant to signal a more aggressive COVID-19 approach and end some key Trump policies while setting the agenda for the next 4 years. Some significant executive orders are already anticipated, as previously detailed, as well as policy changes to combat the coronavirus pandemic.
Right.
I think there's going to be a major shift in gears here with the Biden presidency, Chip.
Right. And going through the list of the executive orders that will be signed by soon-to-be President Biden, it's going to be a top priority for all of us, trying to figure out exactly what has changed very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Janet Yellen said the U.S. will not seek a weaker exchange rate to gain advantage over other nations, and said, if confirmed as Treasury Secretary, that she will work against any moves by other countries to pursue such a strategy. Yellen also talked about interest rates, saying, quote, in a very low interest rate environment like we're in, what we're seeing is that even though the amount of debt relative to the economy has gone up, the interest burden has not, close quote. Yellen could be confirmed as soon as tomorrow and has said she will make pandemic-related economic relief to individuals and to the nation a priority. I can't wait to hear what Bubba's got to say this afternoon. I really can't.
Listen, if you're paying interest, even if you're paying low interest, if the principal increases, your interest burden increases. I don't know how you can say that. Am I wrong?
I don't think so. If you are, we both are. It seemed obvious to me, but
let's
see
what Bubba says this afternoon then.
I can't wait.
Oh, either can
I. Around 60,000 borrowers were approved for more than $5 billion in forgivable loans during the first week of the reopened Paycheck Protection Program. That's according to the Small Business Administration. The Small Business Coronavirus Relief effort relaunched January 11 after closing last August. The first wave of applications was largely handled by community and small lenders after the SBA set aside time for them to process the loans exclusively. Chip, the program's restart comes as many small businesses continue to struggle with the fallout from the pandemic. I think we still, what we need is money velocity, I think is really what we need here, right?
Well, for the small businesses that are tapping into the Paycheck Protection Program and other programs through the SBA, the Small Business Administration, I think as soon as they get it, they're going to send that money on through, and it's become survival time for so many of them. It's really tough to see.
Well, quickly here, domestic consumption in China is lagging. Retail sales shrunk 3.9% in 2020 from the previous year, and demand for imported goods fell slightly. Now, many Chinese employers cut salaries or hours, leaving consumers anxious, and many opted to save more. The Chinese government also did not hand out checks to consumers, rather focusing on stimulus for factories and other businesses, that according to the Wall Street Journal. And finally, the Trump administration Tuesday night announced they had granted two small refinery exemptions that were pending for the 2019 compliance year, leaving 30 still pending for that compliance year, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was one in there. There was a reversal on a 2018 SRE that was originally denied.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll talk with Jeff Cooper from RFA about this on tomorrow morning's show. All right, now, thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Margie, how you doing this morning?
Hey, Chip, good morning.
Hey, so the COVID caused changes in ag retail, which ones might be here to stay?
Yeah, we partnered with our friends at Aimpoint Research and did a study earlier this year trying to answer that exact question, right? How has COVID-19 changed ag retail? And in a parallel industry, I just talked to a farm equipment dealer who says that COVID has brought about technology usage by his customer base 2 to 3 years faster than even he was expected. So I think another anecdote to add on to our research that COVID has been an accelerant for technology adoption. And what I think is a really important takeaway for ag retailers would be that 84% of farmers, when they deal with their primary retailer, the retailer they spend the most money with, 84% speak with a specific individual. And I think the continuity in that customer relationship is still pivotal on those key team members that are the trusted advisor to farmers.
Yeah. Yeah. So even though it's still maybe the way that we're doing business has changed, but relationships still matter.
Right. And you're spot on, Chip. You know, a lot of folks, they prefer to do business in person, which has been a challenge this past year. So how can we stay connected and how can ag retailers help instill that loyalty?
Right. Right. It's with that relationship. Good stuff, Margie. Thank you.
Yeah. Full stories available on thedailyscoops.com.
Yep. And don't forget, you can find Margie on Twitter. It's at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. All right. Coming up next, our conversation with former USDA Secretary Mike Johanns right here on AgriTalk. If soybean growers want to protect against herbicide resistance and preserve the genetic yield potential of their crops, they must aggressively manage tough weeds throughout the entire growing season. Today, I'm joined by Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Bobby, why is it so important for growers to use an overlapping two-pass herbicide program?
A robust season-long herbicide program helps growers reduce the weed seed bank and manages weeds before they become a problem. We recommend a herbicide program to include products with multiple effective sites of action. This is key for managing herbicide resistance and controlling tough weeds. Applying products that deliver at least two effective sites of action takes pressure off of the individual active ingredient, allowing growers to not only have clean fields and maximize yield potential, but it also protects and preserves herbicide technologies for the future.
Yes, excellent, Bobby. So what program would you recommend to growers who want to keep their soybean fields clean throughout the season?
Regardless of trait platform, start with a pre-emergent herbicide program delivering early season weed management, utilizing products such as Boundary, Broadax, or Prefix herbicides from Syngenta. In dicamba-tolerant soybeans, apply Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology herbicide early post-emergent. This approach will overlap your residual applications while maximizing weed control and help the crop reach its full yield potential.
That's outstanding. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, explaining the benefits of applying Tavium as part of a strong two-pass herbicide program of overlapping residuals. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's a bit of a different Wednesday. This is the Farmer Forum. We're going to be talking with some former USDA Ag secretaries, and we're going to continue to look forward. We're looking for solutions, and we're going to kick this off with former USDA Secretary Mike Johanns. Secretary Johanns, I could say former senator, I could say former governor. There's a long list of titles that we could put on you, but we sure appreciate you making time and being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
Excellent. I want to start with one of the more controversial issues that we have dealt with over the past 4 years, but many would also argue that we are in a much better place today than we were 4 years ago, and that's on trade policy. How, if you had an opportunity to sit down, and maybe you have, to sit down with the Biden administration and to sit down with incoming USDA Secretary Vilsack 2.0, what would you tell them about dealing with China?
Well, what I would tell them is that when you deal with the Chinese, you just have to start every meeting recognizing that what they're really trying to achieve is what's best for China. They come in with a viewpoint that if it's good for China, then it's bound to be good for everybody else, whether it is or it isn't. So they're tough to deal with. But I would also share with them that they are always prepared. They are ready to talk a deal. They need our products. They are desperately trying to rebuild their protein production after African swine fever. So they need corn, they need soybeans, and this is a great market. So be tough, but be open to the possibility that things can be worked out and we can sell our products.
Yeah. Yeah. The point that you made right out of the gate there is so good. If it's good for China, then China thinks it should be good for everybody, which brings us to a point of leverage. It was kind of amazing to me how much leverage we did see created by the tariffs and the tariff schemes of the Trump administration. Do we maintain that form of leverage, or do you think that we should be trying to get into the CPTPP and get some multinational leverage going?
It's always good in a trade negotiation to have friends at the table, other countries that can push back with us. Having said that, the issues we faced the last 4 years were going to come to a head at some point, and they did. Yes. And finally, the United States stood up, and God bless the American farmer and rancher, because this was damaging. They saw markets dry up in China, and you know, they hung in there. They said, look, this had to happen. And so now that we see a little bit of opening and China's buying products again, we can see the result at the marketplace. We've not seen the prices we're seeing today for corn, for soybeans, for a very long time. And, you know, pretty significant piece of that is China's buying again, and that they need those products to rebuild their protein production. So I think we can afford to be tough now. I think we can we can push. We can ask them to meet us halfway or more, and we don't have to assume that every negotiation is going to be what I said it would. What they want, which is, you know, they always want what's best for China. So I'm optimistic. I just think a lot of hard work was done in the last 4 years, but it prepares us for where we're at today.
Good. I like that. That's encouraging. Let's go over to the upcoming farm bill debate. We had a conversation with House Ag Committee Chairman David Scott on yesterday's show, and he set out a list of priorities for his committee: food security, climate change, equality and fairness for all farmers. I want to focus on what he said is the number two issue, and that is that climate change. When we see the Biden administration saying that they're going to focus on the environmental issues, does that mean buying into the Green New Deal? Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't see that happening, because that is way out there. That's very extreme. And Biden was cautious about that. And I think he'll continue to be cautious. But here's something that I think is very important for all of us to watch. The Obama administration, for the 8 years they were there, basically said to Congress, you write the farm bill. We're here to serve in advisory capacity. But they really weren't pushing a major agenda when the farm bill was written while they were in office. I think that's going to be different this time, and I'm anxious to see just how different. Will Tom Vilsack engage? Will they actually draft language and take it up to the Hill that they went past that would make the farm bill more green? And I think they'll be getting a lot of pressure to do that, and we'll just have to see if that's what they try to deliver to those who want a more green farm bill.
Right. What kind of a role do you think will be charted out for biofuels in this next farm bill?
I worry about biofuels. It's been a while since we've had a steady direction, if you will, on biofuels. You know, we could talk about the waivers for small refineries. We could talk about a whole host of issues. But if there's one thing out there that I must admit I'm concerned about, is what is the future for biofuels? We'll see. I just wonder if the Biden administration is going to push biofuels like the Bush administration did when I was Secretary of Agriculture. The bloom kind of went off the rose, and I'm not sure that Biden scores a lot of points with the green elements in his party if he moves in the direction of biofuels. So that one I put in the category of pay attention. I'm worried about it. We need a strong biofuels industry for agriculture. I'm not exactly certain this is the administration to deliver that. I hope I'm wrong on that point.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Is it going to be a push at the electric vehicles? Is that the primary goal?
I think it's a whole host of things. You know, everybody talks about electric vehicles, but somehow that electricity has to come from somewhere, right? I mean, if you're not filling up your car at the gas pump, you're charging it in your garage. I mean, the electricity is being produced, and what's right. the impact on the environment? So here's what I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a whole host of things. I think carbon capture will be something that there'll be a lot of discussion about. I think Tom Vilsack may come in and propose an idea that creates a more environmentally friendly approach to agriculture. That's always a possibility. The more extreme elements, I don't think get a foothold because I don't think you can pass that kind of farm bill. I just right. don't think it's possible knowing
right.
Who's on the House Ag Committee and in the Senate Ag Committee. So, but I think they'll push. There's no question about it. We'll just see how much the Biden administration okay. responds to that when they carry their ideas to the Hill for the farm bill.
Okay, very good. Not a lot of time left here, Secretary Johannes, but I want to switch gears on you one more time. Last week, it didn't even feel like immigration issues were on the radar for the first 100 days of the Biden administration. On Tuesday of the following week, yes, they're there. They are an issue. Can they be addressed adequately in the next 2 years?
I'm not optimistic about that, just to be very blunt and candid about it. I don't see a proposal at the moment that gains the bipartisan support that is necessary to get major immigration reform done. Now, I will also acknowledge that there's all of this chatter about eliminating the filibuster. I don't see support for that yet. But if that were to happen, then it comes down to, is there a majority vote in the Senate and the House to pass immigration reform? But I don't see 60 votes in the Senate around really any idea to comprehensively change immigration laws, although I think Biden's going to push it. And I think his base is saying he needs to push it. But
yeah.
I didn't see the votes when I was there, and I don't think it's changed.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Secretary Johannes, it is always good to talk with you. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning and sharing some of your insights into what to expect over the next few years. Thank you, sir.
All right. Great. Take care.
Thank you. That is former USDA Secretary Mike Johannes. We'll be back with former USDA Secretary Dan Gleckman in just a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, this March bean contract, boy, it didn't take it long to fall back and test support at 1350, did it?
No, you know, and we're well off the session lows, but yep. bears are still solidly in control. So, you know, key today is some of those technical levels and then the fact that third day down here in a row. So, you know, moving forward, if it's just a correction, this should probably finish it. If it's more than that, a deeper, longer standing correction, then we'll see follow through tomorrow. So close today is key, but price action the final 2 days this week are probably even more critical.
Yeah, great perspective there. What kind of impact is that having on corn trade?
Well, corn market's under pressure, down about a nickel here, like soybeans, off its session lows. You know, meal market, it's under pressure as well. Soy oil is the one that's the outlier today, trading to the upside and trying to pull everything at least off its lows, if not higher by the end of the session. So we'll have to see which one wins out in that tug of war. Wheat market kind of mixed now with a downside bias.
Gotcha. Lower corn prices means higher feeder cattle.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's kind of been the hallmark here recently is whatever happens in the corn markets, feeder cattle does the opposite, and that's definitely the case today with support there. You know, we do have a little bit of a weaker trade in the cash market here for fat cattle early this yeah. week, and so that's limiting buying interest in live cattle futures.
Yeah, no question that there was some surprise that somebody jumped on a 102 bid. And we've got some strength in the lean hog market as we make our way to midday. Thank you, Brian. That is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady here on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you can join us today. Joining us for the conversation here for the second half of the show is Farm Journal News Director John Harith. John, welcome. How are you today? Oh, we lost John. So maybe he's not joining us. With that in mind, let's go ahead and bring in our guest, Secretary Dan Glickman, former Secretary Dan Glickman. Appreciate your time with us here, Secretary Glickman. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a historic day. So a lot of us are watching the celebration on Capitol Hill, and it's going to bring some big changes to Washington and national policy. So it's kind of historic that I'm here talking to you today.
Absolutely. That's one of the big reasons that we wanted to have you on. What kind of thoughts and memories does it generate for you, Secretary?
Well, you know, I mean, I got less hair, and it's white now, but and I'm a little heavier, but you know, I was first on these Capitol steps in January of 1977. So that's 44 years ago during the inauguration of President Jimmy Carter when I was a freshman congressman from the 4th District of Kansas. So it just brings back a lot of things. And ironically, Joe Biden was already a senator at the time I was a freshman congressman a long time ago. So I knew him later on, especially in my role as secretary, because I went to Delaware a couple times, primarily to look at chicken issues, which was a big deal in Delaware.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's some chatter on social media, Secretary Glickman, that, you know, is the ceremony really necessary? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, right now I think it's very necessary. I mean, after all, the Capitol was stormed by thugs, and, you know, the country is very resilient, but it showed us that we're sometimes a little shakier than we thought we were. So I think that, you know, the pomp and ceremony, I think people like. It's certainly not like what they have in Great Britain and other countries where they have, you know, monarchs and that kind of thing. But I think we need this ceremony today. I think the healing that needs to take place. We're a very divided country in terms of partisan divisions and rural-urban divisions and geographical divisions. And, you know, my hope is that the Biden-Harris administration will do their best to work in a bipartisan way to help bring us together. The last 4 years, there was a huge amount of division in our country. And I think it's time to try to pull us together.
What are the odds, as you look at the Biden administration and the experience that the man obviously brings to the presidency, what do you think the odds are that he can narrow some of the political divide that we are dealing with?
I'm actually hopeful. A couple things. Number one is he was in Congress for about 40 years, so he understands the Congress, the role between the Article I and Article II branches of government, and the importance of working together. Number two, some of his closest friends were on the other side of the aisle, like John McCain and others. And so he understands the need for bipartisanship in government. And I think that's going to certainly make, you know, make a big difference. Three, he's well-liked. He's decent. He expresses a lot of empathy. He's a religious man, but a personally deeply religious man, not religion for the glory, but in terms of dealing with not only the problems of today, but all the catastrophes that he's suffered in his life. So I look for a calmer time period, a feeling of healing. Now, I'm not telling you that things are going to be perfect. There's going to be partisan differences. I hope they're constructive partisan differences, but I think things are going to get better. They're calmer than they have been.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, let's dive into what to expect on some farm policy and environmental issues, climate change. They've been priority issues for past administrations, but the efforts to battle climate change are going to define an administration like we've never seen before. Is that overstating it?
I think it's going to be one of the top priorities of the administration. I mean, fortunately, we're going to have a Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, who's got a lot of experience in not only climate issues, but also farm issues, crop issues, livestock issues. And so I think he's going to be a steadying force to encourage agriculture's involvement in climate reduction, but at the same time and try to ensure that it's done with good judgment. And one thing I do know is President Biden has a very close personal relationship with Secretary Vilsack.
Yes.
And I think that's going to help.
That's interesting. That is interesting. And it will be it will be important to see how that relationship does define the farm policy going forward. So have you identified a list of opportunities that you think the focus on climate change will bring for farmers and landowners? Or, you know what, maybe we should be looking at those two separately for right now, difference between farmers and landowners. But the opportunities that might come their way because of climate change and the battle against it.
Well, I think that I think Congress is going to look at ways that farmers can get an economic benefit out of, let's say, carbon sequestration, carbon sinking, a lot of other conservation measures. So, you know, in addition to the normal farm programs which we have and which Congress comes up with during every farm bill, I do think that you're going to see climate reduction, particularly in the soil health area and in you know air quality areas, come to the forefront, be a higher priority, and not just in USDA, but in a lot of other agencies as well. And the big thing is to make sure that USDA takes an assertive role. A lot of things are going to need to be done, but you need to have people involved in agriculture who are at the table helping to make these decisions.
Right, absolutely. And so far, so much of it has been done by farmers, landowners on a voluntary basis. But what about regulatory pressures on how farmers farm? Should farmers expect more direction on how chemicals, water, nutrients, other technologies are going to be used on their farms in the future?
You know, I think you are probably going to see a stronger regulatory push by this administration than we saw in the last one. But remember how important Congress is in dealing with a lot of these issues.
Yes.
And so Congress is a tempering influence on an administration that, you know, may end up going too far. But we do have a lot of issues, I mean, in terms of not only water quality, but water availability as our aquifers begin to continue to decrease, as we look at our research agenda, which is really important, to find ways to use less water to produce crops and to feed animals. It's one of the things that I hope that this administration does is really push the research agenda, the ag research agenda, which is really critical for the future of agriculture. So these are going to be big issues in nutrient management, runoff, use of fertilizer, pesticides. These are going to be, and sometimes they're going to be high conflict issues, but that's just part of the nature of the game, and hope everybody comes to the table and deals with these issues in good faith.
Gotcha. Okay. Want to change gears here a bit and go over to some nutrition topics. The idea of food boxes came early in the Trump administration, didn't really, it was never implemented until some of the stresses caused by the COVID pandemic to bring those food boxes into reality. So these food boxes, are they going to continue, or do you see the nutrition programs going back to a more traditional SNAP assistance?
I think there's going to be a thorough review of the whole nutrition agenda. It happens to be one of my highest priorities. Okay. In fact, I'm going to take a part-time teaching position up at Tufts University School of Nutrition, where I'm going to try to provide the benefit of my thoughts on the relationship between agriculture, nutrition, health, and related issues. So I don't think the food boxes are going to go away, But they're no substitute for the SNAP program, which provides the assistance to, you know, millions and millions of people. I mean, the food boxes have really been helpful with this COVID pandemic, particularly with people out of work, with all the emergencies that have gone on. And I think that in the last few months, we focused more on the nutrition that is in these food boxes.
Yes.
But I wouldn't rely on the food boxes as the way to help feed the hungry. I think our other programs, SNAP, WIC, the Women, Infant, and Children, and the school meals programs are going to be a higher priority. You know, unfortunately, the COVID pandemic is—it's not going to go away right away. I mean, I'm very lucky. I got my first shot last week. Okay, I'm over 75, so thank goodness I qualified. you know, there's just we've got 400,000 people who've died in this country. Even if we get everybody vaccinated, and I hope that's one of the highest priorities of the new administration, is to get everybody vaccinated in the next 3 or 4 months. It frustrates me that it's taken so long to move this process through. I realize we got vaccines in reasonably short order, but that we didn't plan to get people vaccinated quickly is frustrating. So as long as that's the case, people are going to be hurting, a lot of jobless people, a lot of hungry people. Mm-hmm. So our food programs are going to need to be there. And the other thing I think you're going to see more and more attention to is the area of nutrition, especially as it relates nutrition, health, and medicine. There's this old French philosopher who said, you are what you eat. And, you know, what goes into our nation's diet is important. USDA and other agencies of government work on this all the time. But we have it also, beyond COVID, we have this other epidemic of type 2 diabetes, and that's also a real problem.
Hey, if you can, Secretary Glickman, stick around. I'd like to talk about the next farm bill debate next.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We are having a conversation with former USDA Secretary Dan Glickman. Joining us now is Farm Journal News Director John Harith. John, I know that you've got a question for Secretary Glickman.
Yeah, thanks, Chip. And Mr. Secretary, Secretary Vilsack has a very rare opportunity here for a second bite at the apple at USDA. If you were in his shoes, if you had a second chance at it, what would be your priorities? What would you do?
Well, fortunately, he's younger than me, so he's probably got a more creative approach to all this. But look, he's got the Department of Agriculture is one of the most interesting, complicated, and incredibly important departments in government. And it touches every American's life, from farmers to ranchers to all sorts of producers of ag commodities to consumers, food safety, trade, forestry, you know, nutrition, you name it. So I think, of course, we don't have a farm bill coming up immediately, but we're going to have to look at our farm policy and determine how best to continue to implement it. The last few years have seen enormous payouts to farmers as a result of COVID and the China trade issue, and I don't think the country is probably going to be able to afford those continued payouts forever and ever. It's just too much money. So we've got to get, that's why we got to get COVID behind us, and we've got to deal with our trade issues so they're not, China and other places in the world become more predictable purchasers of our products. So that's trade, certainly looking at the implementation of farm policy. The USDA has this very capable professional crew of people around the country with the Farm Service Agency, Rural Development, the conservation people, and they do a great job. So that's his first thing. Trade, as I said, will have to be a second thing. Climate is going to be something that's going to be a continuing issue I talked about before,
yep.
And nutrition and food safety as well. So there's so many things he has to do, but the great thing about Tom Vilsack is he's got experience. And he doesn't walk into that building not knowing what's going to happen.
Right. Right. Great point there on the experience, because the ag leadership in Congress, we lost some greats. from your home state. Senator Roberts is not going to be playing a role in the negotiation of the next farm bill. Conaway out of Texas, Peterson out of Minnesota. Some great experience has been lost. Is that going to create a unique set of challenges for this Congress as they start identifying the next, when the next farm bill debate begins?
Well, first of all, we got some new great faces, too. I mean, they're not all new, but in the Senate, we have Debbie Stabenow, who was a real partner to Pat Roberts all those years, and John Bozeman, who's likely to be ranking Republican. Terrific guy, both first-class professional people as well. And we have a new chair on the House Agriculture side, David Scott from Georgia. He's well-respected, very much involved in Southern agriculture. And so I think the Congress will be a real ally of farmers and ranchers as they have been in the past. As I said, the big challenge is going to be fiscal money, because we probably can't afford to pay out $40 or $50 billion a year in farm program payments. And so we're going to have to figure out how to strengthen the farm economy without a continued federal bailouts of magnitude that we've seen in the past. But I think we can do it. And the other good thing is that we got to keep this urban-rural coalition we've had going forever.
Yep. You
know, what I call the Dole-McGovern coalition, which continues to exist. Rural interest, urban interest. It's the only way you get farm programs through the Congress, and the only way you get nutrition programs through the Congress is to have that kind of collaboration.
Exactly. Exactly. Collaboration is going to be something that we're all going to be looking for. I know that you've got to jump, Secretary Glickman. We certainly appreciate your time on a historic day and appreciate all your perspectives. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for your great work and helping people know about food and agriculture policy. We have a new president now. Let's all go forward and do our best for farming and agriculture in the future.
Amen to that. Amen. All right. Thank you so much. That is former USDA Secretary Dan Glickman. John, he's exactly right. He has, it looks like they jumped the schedule a little bit in D.C., and we've got a new president, President Biden.
Yeah. Well, constitutionally, I guess noon we do, but yeah, they've sworn him in, so.
Yeah, that's, is, and he is making an address to the nation as we speak. So, yeah, they pushed the schedule just a little bit there.
When does DC ever run ahead of schedule?
I was thinking the same thing. Didn't really want to say it, but I was thinking the same
thing.
Yeah. nutrition. Remember when Tom Vilsack, in his first of what was going to be 8 years as USDA secretary, when he first stepped in, nutrition was like number one priority, and really the second priority was a distant priority for Tom Vilsack. It was all about nutrition when he started there. So it's going to be interesting if, because he did make the transition over to a focus on production agriculture by the time he was into his third or fourth year. He was very much focused on production agriculture. But I wonder if, as you said, the second bite of the apple is going to be, if he's going to view it as an opportunity to focus on those nutrition programs.
Well, and let's not forget, this is a highly personal issue for him because of his upbringing. You know, he was an orphan, and even once he was adopted, food was an issue growing up. And so this is something he takes extremely personally, and it's something that he's going to push for because of that, not just because of policy.
That's right. That's right. It'll be very, very interesting, no doubt. No doubt. Okay, boy, big thank you to former USDA Secretaries Mike Johanns and Dan Glickman for joining us on Inauguration Day. You've got to come back this afternoon. We've got Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities. And then tomorrow morning, we're going to have a conversation again with Jeff Cooper, the president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, to try to figure out exactly what is going on with some of the SREs that were issued overnight. And we're also going to be joined by USB spokesperson Belinda Burrier right here on AgriTalk. thanks to Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.